Hello, and welcome to another edition of the MicroISV show here on Channel 9. This is Michael Lehman, Technology Evangelist for MicroISVs, along with my co-host Bob Walsh. You can find out about our MicroISV evangelism efforts over at projectglidepath.net. And you can find out about Bob's latest book, ClearBlogging, at clearblogging.com, and his efforts as a MicroISV at mymicroisv.com, and of course, safarisoftware.com, his MicroISV company. Today on the MicroISV show, we're talking with Mike Rohde, who's a designer and art director for Makalu Media, and author for more than 4 years of the RohDesign.com blog. Mike works with clients worldwide and is a specialist in corporate identity, branding, and icon design, and more. Something I think that a lot of MicroISVs have a need for, because lots of us are really great developers, but not necessarily great artists. Welcome, Mike.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Just great.
Good.
So, Bob, take it away.
Okay, well, first off, I want to disclose something. This is a full disclosure moment. I've hired Mike to do two identity projects for me, and I'm paying him nice money for this, not getting a break on the price, and I'm really happy that I was able to get his services. So as you listen to this podcast, keep in mind it's not just another one of those Let's Talk to the Nice Person podcasts. I believe in this guy, and I put my money where my mouth was on this one. Mike, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good. Well, you've worked with other micro ISVs. One of the most visible was Ian Landsman at userscape.com. And I guess the place to start here is, why does visual design graphics matter to micro ISVs?
Well, I would say, you know, we live in an incredibly visual world. Everywhere you look, there's a visual that's either actively trying to get your attention or, you know, in the background. And I would say that the culture is heading more toward a visual direction. And so I think that it's really important that you have the visual aspect of your company cornered. And that I think specifically, if you have a good, consistent visual design, that it can provide a kind of a trustability to your company, especially for micro ISVs, which at least the ones that I've worked for, a good chunk of them are web-based businesses. So, I mean, the front door of your business is your website very often, or it might be a business card you hand out to a potential client or at a conference. And so, you know, if you've got a good, consistent visual identity that's happening in every location that people contact you, that can be a really important competitive advantage, I would say.
Well, that makes sense to me. What about the fact that most micro ISVs are not visual designers? They're not graphics people by nature. You know, I've looked at a lot of developer sites and micro ISV sites, and I have to say we're just not that good at. What can we do to correct our sort of lag there?
Well, I would say probably in defense of developers, like you say, that a lot of developers are not great at graphics, and a lot of the guys that I work with and friends of mine who are developers readily admit it. They're not afraid to admit it, and a lot of reasons that they come to me. And I think it just has to do with the way that they're built. I think developers are built to be developers. They love developing applications, and that's their focus. And I think Bob and I, you and I both have mentioned that we were reading Seth Godin's The Dip, which is his recent book and e-book and audio book. And the thing that he talks about there is getting rid of the things that you don't do well so that you can focus on the things you do really well. And I think that's just at the core of what developers are challenged with, is they feel like, you know, I'm going to save money, I'm going to spend a bunch of hours and try and come up with a logo and a website, and you know, it comes out mediocre just because that's not their focus area. When, you know, and they could bring in someone who specializes in that and have them focus on that aspect for them. And I think it's just, it's actually, I've found it for developers to be freeing for them, where they don't have to worry about, you know, having to deal with this visual aspect that they feel uncomfortable in, that they can bring someone in who's an expert, who knows what they're talking about, who can defend ideas, who can provide advice, can listen to their goals, and then turn that into a visual whatever it is that they need, whether it's an identity or a full suite of stuff.
That, well, you mean there's more to Photoshop than just kind of like learning the commands?
Yeah, it's there is definitely some stuff behind design. There's all kinds of rules, and there's things that designers learn over time by producing for clients and understanding how people interact with things that that makes them knowledgeable, just like a developer. You know, as you develop applications, you start to learn tricks, and you start to learn things from other developers. You learn things from experience that you can apply and make your applications better. In the same way, the designer does the same thing. You know, it's a practice in that sense, that you continually practice and improve and understand and learn.
Well, you know, something you said earlier kind of struck a bell with me, that things are becoming much, much more visual.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I'm developing and I'm using text. I may use angle brackets. I may use curly brackets.
Sure.
I may use dots. It doesn't matter. I'm doing text here. And I just kind of cringe at the thought that more and more of how we communicate is based on something that I can't do, because I do stick figures, and that's about the size of it.
Mm-hmm.
What do you suggest as far as some basic, call it visual literacy, that micro ISVs need to at least get some idea about? What are like the very, very basic things they have to understand about this visual stuff?
Well, I would say in context of what we're talking about, which I guess I would say would be identity and a website, since that's probably the key things that a micro ISV has to their benefit. In those cases, the general rules of design apply, that you need to be kind of focusing your message. Overall, you need to kind of keep your message simple and clear, and make it clear what it is, the solution it is that you're offering. Because I think a lot of times, because developers are very code-oriented, very text-oriented, and they make purchases based on bulleted lists and specifications and those kind of informational details, you know, a lot of their customers may not be buying on those details. So you have to be clear what it is that you're solving for the customer. And then you can lay the specs on them once you've convinced them, you know, that this solution is what they need. So I think overall, the idea of providing a simple, clear message is important. And the way you do that is a couple ways. You don't cram a lot of stuff on your page. For instance, on your web page, you try and focus on the things that are really critically important. I'm working on a website for a client right now who develops software, and they had a problem where they had four products and they were all equally sized, and it was, you know, kind of all in one place. And the solution that, after talking with them and listening to what they said, was, is, well, these two products are really our key products. They're the ones that bring us the money.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the ones that we focus on developing. The other two are kind of like, yeah, you know, they're add-ons, or they're nice and they're features, but they're not as important. So, you know, the solution there was, you know, pump up the two things that are critical and reduce the emphasis on the two things that were secondary, and sort of clear out a lot of the information that was unnecessary on the main page, so that it just reinforces the focus on the important thing. It's, you know, the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule. You want to kind of rip away as much of the 80% that's not important and get the 20% that's really important to the front and communicate that.
Well, let's say that you decide that you want to work with a professional.
Mm-hmm.
How do you find one? How do you engage one? What should you expect that they're able to do, and what are you expected to be able to do?
Well, I say, as far as finding them, I think it's getting easier to find them. Just like for micro SVs, you know, you can compete with a website. You know, designers are the same way. They've got information they can put out there. They have websites where you can search for designers, or you can, if you've got people that you can ask for referrals, that's another way to find someone.
Mm-hmm.
You can find information, like, for instance, even on Flickr. I've been using Flickr now for posting up some of my work.
Mm-hmm.
So I suspect that people may be scanning, you know, Flickr for logo or something, and they'll come across some of the work I've done. So that could be a way to find them. As far as retaining them, I would say... probably the most important thing, if they are on the web, is to see if they've got any information on the web that you can see. And first of all, find out, do you sync with the way they work? In other words, if you've got a goal or a focus for your product or service and you have a very clear idea, hey, I want it to be professional and clean and focused, you know, you're not going to want to hire someone who does, like, you know, old English text and scrolly details. It's just not going to fit, and it's going to eventually going to fall apart. So what I think is important to do first is to find someone who works in the way that you would like to have your product appear. So in other words, their portfolio of stuff matches your vision for where you want to go. And if that's the case, you know, then look for samples of their work and, you know, see that they've done it a reasonable amount of time, that, you know, they've got experience doing it. It's not just a one-off. And, you know, if they've got a blog, that's even better, because then you can start reading, you know, what's their personality like?
Mm-hmm.
How do they solve problems? For instance, one of the things I like to do is when I finish logo projects, I'll put up posts, and I'll include my rationale for what was the challenge, how did I solve the problem. I'll put sketches up there,
mm-hmm.
all the way through to the final. And the reason I do that is because I know that there's people that come there, you know, 2, 3, 4 months later, and they'll come across that post for however they did, and they can read that and get a feeling for, you know, how does Mike approach this problem and how did he solve it. And so it becomes sort of, I guess, a 24/7, you know, brochure of how I work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the other posts that I put in there, personal posts about whatever I might be interested in, you know, fill in a little bit of the gaps outside of the professional about, you know, what is this guy interested in? What's his personality like? Because I think you being a text person, you know, if you read and someone's a pretty good writer, you can, you know, pick up some details about what their personality is like and how they think by mm-hmm. their writing. So I think that's really critical to do, is if you're able to kind of see their thought process, if it's available to see it.
Well, let me play hypothetical here for a second.
Okay.
Let's say I'm a micro ISV. My product is selling nicely, but not spectacularly. I built the website myself. It may have taken a lot of effort and longer than I expected to, but mm-hmm. it's up, it's there, it seems to be kind of working. I kind of put together a logo and by using my initials and of the company and kind of made them big, and that's my logo.
Mm-hmm.
Given a situation like that, any way to quantify just how much a good graphic artist can make a difference? Any perhaps examples that you can think of from your experience where you've walked into a situation like that, and by the time you're done with it, you're talking about a really different situation?
Well, you know, I've had a variety of different experiences, and, you know, like anything, design is somewhat subjective. Although, you know, you've got server logs, so you can certainly see how your server logs are doing before and also after.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if your sales are increasing because people are finding them, you know, that certainly is a quantifiable.
So the proof is in the sales.
I think that's part of it. I think, you know, like I said early on, you know, if you've got a high-quality identity that's been correctly applied and is consistent across everything you put out, whether it's your website, your invoice, even the business cards you hand out at a conference, I think, at least, you know, I've got cards that I hand out. I really feel confident when I go and hand a card to someone that, you know, it looks good, that it projects a really good image of who I am and what I offer. And, you know, that's a hard thing to measure, is the confidence that you get from feeling like, you know, you've got something that looks good and is consistent and, you know, represents you wherever you go, even if you leave it behind.
Okay, well, so, let's say I've got a Web 2.0 service that I'm trying to sell on the web. And, you know, I've listened to the various people out there, like 37 Signals. I'm doing the Web 2.0 thing. You know, my corners are round and shiny. you know, I've got big type and not much of it. Do I really have to go any further than that? Or, you know, is there further to go than that?
I think the problem that you face if you're just going for aesthetics and visuals
mm-hmm.
is pretty soon it runs out of gas, because you're just sort of making, you're putting lipstick on the pig, I guess you could say, and maybe not to that extreme, but
okay.
You know, you're focusing on the visuals and you're losing sight of the fact that it's got to do with the whole package. It's got to do with the structure of the site. It's got to do with the usability and the experience, as well as the visuals. I mean, those all work together hand in hand to, you know, make a unified product. So by just simply putting rounded corners in big type and, you know, sort of approximating the look that's popular, you know, the problem with that is it's what happens when that goes out of fashion. Well, now you've got to redo your thing, but, you know, the underlying structure hasn't really changed, and it's not easy for people to use, or it's difficult to find, you know, what products are available and how much are they, or why is this thing going to solve my problem? If those things aren't addressed at the underlying level, then no amount of pretty graphics are going to solve those problems for you.
Well, let me argue it another way. If I'm going to start a micro ISV that's going to do a Web 2.0 application, and my goal here is to be successful in my business, not just to, you know, do something that people are interested in but don't pay money for, should I be seriously thinking about finding a, you know, graphic designer, a visual designer to work with, maybe even partner with from the get-go? I mean, put it another way, can a programmer get by in the Web 2.0 visual world?
I think you can get by, but I guess that, how do you qualify that? I mean, you can certainly make something happen, but I think to have the graphic support and consistency certainly benefits you. It makes something worth coming back to, and if it's, you know, if it's easy to use, that's going to make it something that people want to come back to. And, you know, the whole, I guess the whole Web 2.0 social networking stuff is all about people, you know, using your stuff. Like, for instance, you mentioned 37 Signals and Basecamp. I mean, they have a, you know, their aesthetic is, you know, attractive, but, I mean, they don't put a lot of emphasis on the look and feel. I mean, it's pretty minimal, actually. But a lot of their focus is on how does the thing function and work. And I think to have a designer to kind of provide objective information on those issues is really critical, because they're going to see things from that visual point of view and the experience point of view, where you know, micro ISV developer is going to be focusing on the code and how does it work and what kind of problems, scaling and those kind of things. That's their focus. So I think, you know, I think it is, it does help to have someone who's there to support you graphically.
Okay. Well, let's take another question here, if you will.
Okay.
You know, one thing I kind of wonder, because I've looked at a couple of the sites that you have and that you've talked through what you've actually done, and I'm looking at the sketches that you've come up with of all the stuff that you've done. I'm amazed at just the number of different ideas that you've managed to get for being able to express visual ideas. I mean, it looks like sometimes you do 30, 40, 50 different ideas. And I kind of wonder, how do you manage to churn out so many different ideas? What's your process there?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I was actually thinking about that today and in the last several weeks, because I've got a lot of projects on the burner right now. But you know, the thing that I've, when I look back and try to figure out what it is that I'm doing, a lot of it has to do with the information I get up front. So I ask a lot of questions of clients, like, what are your goals? You know, what kind of things do you want this identity to project? And, you know, any kind of information about the business, what is the area that they're working in? Who are the competitors? What are things they like and don't like? And then kind of based on that, I sort of take it all in and let it brew. And then when I sit down and sketch, I'll often write down, you know, details or notes about what those things are. And sort of, I guess the easiest way to say it is I let the information kind of guide me in the direction I need to go. And
okay.
So, you know, rather than just saying, yeah, here's a solution that I've used in another place, let's use that again, I really try hard to let the situation, the company, the goal, all those bits of information inform me on the direction I want to go. And, you know, I've got, over time, I've built up ways of researching and finding information and getting inspired. And, you know, sometimes it means going to the cafe and sitting with a pencil and a paper away from computers and doing it that way so there's no distractions. But I think, you know, it's just over the years, you sort of build up these techniques. And, you know, I don't know if I could probably fully describe how I do that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like asking a developer, well, how did you solve that problem? They might, you know, they may not be able to answer exactly how they got to the solution.
Well, I have to spill the beans here a bit for you, Mike, because first off, if people go take a look at shrinkster.com/PBR, you'll see a link leading to Ian Landsman's blog where he talks about creating a business logo.
Mm-hmm.
And there, I'm looking at least 40 different designs that you've sketched out on paper and that Ian scanned in.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was doing a little research on you, I found something that you had already put up, PlannerHack.com. You've got a whole organized way of doing things that has nothing to do with computers for keeping track of your ideas, your things to do, and the rest of it. I'm curious, how did you decide to end up using a Moleskine as your super PDA?
Well, that's interesting because I was a pretty hardcore Palm user. I still like Palms quite a bit,
mm-hmm.
but I found that because I was at a computer all day, you know, I really wasn't making use of the Palm the way it was really intended to be used, which is as a mobile device. You know, anything I could use it for, I could use the computer for because I was sitting right next to it. So it seemed kind of crazy to continue using this device that was just taking time. So at the time, I had been using Moleskines for quite a while for sketching and writing notes and ideas and things. And I thought, well, that's a nice small pocketable size. Why couldn't I just hack it and turn it into a planner? So
mm-hmm.
I started experimenting with some old Moleskines, and I figured out that you could fit X number of lines, and a week fit on there really nicely, and a view, I could lay it on my desk. You know, it's had instant on, it never shut off. And so I just started fooling around, and I finally had the idea, hey, why don't I just take one and hack it up and use it for a while, and it turned out that I kind of liked it. You know, it was low overhead, it was pretty easy to use, probably the most putzy thing was producing it because you have to draw it all yourself, but I kind of found that enjoyable. So,
okay, and that's at PlannerHack.com.
Right.
Kind of the story of that. You know, I like the way you use Flickr in that as well, by the way.
Okay. Yeah, that's something recent. I just bought a pro account, which now looking back, I wonder why I didn't buy one sooner, but it allows you to do sets and even collections, so you can have a set of related things and then umbrella those under collections. And it's an easy way to kind of put things out. It's got a public face, so, I mean, people browsing can stumble across it, which...
You mean like screenshots of your application?
Yeah. So like
okay.
Ian Landsman's latest redesign, you know, I threw up samples up there of his stuff, as well as logo design, T-shirts that I've done. So you can kind of get a feel for a variety of things, as well as, you know, a lot of sketches. I like sketching not for logos, just for fun, so I put those kind of things up, so... You know, the nice thing is you can kind of go there and get a general feel for what my interests are and the kind of stuff I've done at a glance. So that's very convenient, and I don't have to worry about my server going down. It's, you know, handled by Yahoo, so.
So, Mike, let me move the discussion from the sort of very primitive to the more bleeding edge of things
mm-hmm.
and talk about vector graphics-based things
okay.
like... WPF and Microsoft's recently announced Silverlight. Now you've got developers and designers hopefully having a way to collaborate together. And developers are, I think, you know, kind of find themselves lost in this, oh my goodness, it can look like anything world. You know, what process would you recommend for developers, you know, first of all, in trying to find someone to work in that more vector graphics based world, and when you're not using Photoshop and you're starting to think in vector terms, what kind of challenges does that present you as a designer?
Well, as far as finding people, I've done a little bit of initial research on what Microsoft's doing as far as vector graphics and scalability. And it's kind of exciting because as an old print designer, I grew up learning Adobe Illustrator, which is a vector-based application from Adobe. And so I've sort of cut my teeth on that for many years, and that's what I use for a lot of my work now. And for icon work, I use Fireworks, which happens to also be vector, a vector tool. And, you know, the nice thing about vector tools are, you know, you're building with points and curves. And so when you size it up, it's going to retain the detail, at least to a degree, whether you size it up or down. And you don't have to worry about, for instance, if you built something in Photoshop and now you got to double the size, well, all the pixels are just going to get bigger and it's not going to look terrible. Where with a vector graphic, you know, it's going to scale up and, you know, within some reasonable limits, it's going to look pretty good. One of the challenges with vectors is that while in theory they should size up perfectly because you're dealing with pixels and, you know, how pixels will represent something as opposed to a printed page, when you size things from small to large or large to small, you can lose some of the details from one to the other. So something that was intended to, say, be 128 pixels, like an application icon that gets sized up to, say, 512, because you're dealing with pixels, those pixels are going to, you know, interpolate a little bit differently, and, you know, it's not going to look exactly. So there may need to be some tweaking done in that case. But in general, I think it's pretty exciting. As far as where to find people to do it, that's a really good question. I don't know that I can answer that. I think it's pretty new, so I think there's probably a limited amount of people that are getting into it, but I think there's definitely people that are checking into these tools and learning how to use them. And I think the good news is a lot of designers already work with vector tools, so it's not a humongous transition to move to these new tools.
Well, that definitely sounds like a good thing for developers.
Yeah.
Would you recommend for a micro ISV who's going to go down that route, whether they're going to be building something with WPF or with Silverlight, which is essentially still XAML, that they try to engage a designer earlier rather than later? I mean, because it seems like there's this whole new movement to, form follows function, and
yeah.
It's a completely sort of different development process, just as designing in service orientation is a different development process than our previous, rapid application design, where you just threw a bunch of controls on the on the page and then started writing the code behind them. It's like the world's turning upside down. Now you have to think about what you want to do before you figure out how you're going to do it. And it seems like in the user experience, you got to do the same thing now.
Yeah, and I think, we talked about at the beginning of the program that it's a very visual world, and a lot of that visual stuff is being presented on a computer or in some, interactive way. So you have to think about how things are dealt with in an interactive way. If you're designing for things to be flat like print, that's just not going to work the same way. So having the designer at the onset will help a developer, consider all those aspects and produce a product from the start that's designed to be interactive. And those things have been thought out and thought through in the beginning as part of the goals for the product or the project. And so that it's not a surprise at the end, often the hardest projects to design for are things that have been produced, and then, someone comes to me and say, make this thing look pretty. Because, if it doesn't work well from an experience point of view at the core, putting pretty graphics on it is not going to solve that problem. So the sooner you can bring in a designer to kind of guide you and provide some feedback and say, hey, this idea you guys have to put this button here, it's just not working. I've been doing this and it's very counterintuitive. So, you get those kind of feedback things early on before you commit all your code, to where you got to go tear everything apart to fix something that would have been simple to fix in the beginning.
Right, that makes sense. So, I've got one more question for you.
Sure.
And that is, in this whole process, as people start thinking about applications that zoom in and zoom out and all of these things, there's a different mental process, even to the extent that you can make things disappear when you're zoomed out at a certain level. You can iconify relationships that used to be shown in detail and and all of that. There's a lot of sort of different thinking going on around here. How do you, you don't have to get into the nuts and bolts detail of this, but how do you as a designer even go about estimating how long it's going to take to do something? I presumably, if you do things for people by the hour, there's potentially a lot of hours involved here, or at least a very variable amount of hours. How do you go about trying to answer that question? How long will it take?
Well, I think because a lot of this stuff is so new, there probably aren't exact perfect answers for it, because even the developers don't know how long things might take with these new products. You know, it's still a learning in progress. I would say probably the way I would approach it would be to break the project into smaller chunks and say, okay, we're gonna start with this chunk. This is an important chunk. Let's estimate how long we think this will take, and you know, let's start it. And if we start going over and it's like crazy going over, you know, we need to revise the estimate and refocus, and you know, take us into account when we get to the next chunk that, hey, this is taking longer than we thought it did because of X or Y, and you know, so that you're limiting, you know, the sort of the hours that you might dump into something to a small chunk rather than taking the whole thing in a big wad. That you know, now you're 200 hours over and you're deep into it. Why not take a small chunk and try it out and see what works and what doesn't, and then use that for the next challenge?
That seems very reasonable. Let me ask you sort of a generic question, since mm-hmm. both parties here are working with things that they don't know. Designers like yourself, ever collaborate on a, you know, let's do this together, just as the MicroISV is doing, saying, well, I'm going to, you know, make my money back after I'm actually selling the product? Do you ever potentially invest any sweat equity in these kind of things when the technologies are really, really raw?
Well, you know, I haven't had the opportunity to do that personally. As far as technology stuff, I know I've, on some experimental projects, I've made the commitment to do it because I wanted to learn it, like writing an e-zine I did back in 97. I had no idea, you know, how to do it, you know, how to promote it, any of those kind of things. But I was very interested in it, and I was willing to kind of dump some time in to learn it. Same thing with any kind of new technology. You know, if you can find a designer who's willing to maybe put in some hours on their off time, that could be a good deal, you know, where it's a developer and a designer working together to kind of try something out where, you know, you've got some, I'd say disposable hours, but flexible hours that, you know, if you spent more hours, it's not going to be billed. It's in an equal parties, you know. Each are going to benefit if it goes well, and if it doesn't go well, then you learn your lesson. So I think that's a pretty valid way to go about it, and I think there are a lot of designers who are hip to all this stuff that are very interested in getting in on some, you know, new kind of applications or services that
can
do this kind of thing.
One of the things that in our profession we really don't get much time to actually go do, and that's R&D.
Yeah.
And the reality is that there are so many things on the stove right now cooking that I frankly think that every developer and every graphic artist who works with computers needs to be spending a good 20% of their time just looking up from their keyboard and seeing what's going on around them.
Yep.
Because things are changing. You know, one thing you said that struck a bell with me a few minutes ago about not trying to fix a broken user interface and being brought into a project so late that you're asked to somehow make it all work. It's been very popular in the developer world to sort of treat user interfaces as the afterthought.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the real important stuff. The real important stuff is the transaction handling, you know, the real code that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And personally, I've always thought that was just the wrong way to go for a micro ISV, because whatever else is said and done, your application, if you're going to sell it, or your website that you're going to sell it, you've got to be able to be attractive. You've got to not scare people out of the room with some ugly interface.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, that seems to be something of the minority. Do you think as things get more visual and as more and more visual stuff, as you might say, gets percolated into the developer world, that we may flip to the point where you start with working on the human interface, and then after that's done and after that's established, then you start working on the code behind that? I mean, there's a real trend to that when you look at WPF and you look at Silverlight, and I guess when you start looking at things from Adobe as well, and I'm just wondering if you're starting to see that with the people that you're working with not just the micro ISVs, but you know, the larger companies that you work with.
I think that is a trend, and I think, you know, you might say like the poster boys of that or the 37 Signals guys, I've seen bunches of posts that they wrote where they had this idea for a feature or something, and before they even touched the code, they just went into Photoshop and whipped up some mock-ups and said, this is how we think it would look and work, and mm-hmm. they think through that experience before any code is touched, and then once they establish, yeah, this is the goal, here's where we want to go to, then they, okay, now let's figure out how we're going to make this work, and then the code comes down. So that is certainly a way to do it. We do that with our clients as much as possible. One of the units works with European Space Agency, so, you know, that might take a little bit longer for them to get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we've got a variety of clients, and some of them are very open to a different approach. And, you know, one of the nice things about starting with mock-ups is you can get sign-off by the parties on, you know, how this thing is going to look and function, you know, like a combination of visuals and specs. And those could be, you know, those could be wireframes. They don't have to be fully, you know, fully rendered or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But at least you understand, okay, this is going to go here, and we start thinking, well, you know, if we put that there, you know, are they going to think that's the search, you know, you put an email sign up in the upper right corner, are they going to think it's a search thing? We're getting all kinds of search replies, and you just, it forces you to kind of think through it in a way before you commit to it. And, you know, some of that stuff you're not going to catch. You're going to have to find out, oh, yeah, I guess that email thing up there isn't working too well. The server logs indicate that we're getting all kinds of search traffic and email things. And so, you know, it's going to be a combination of things. But I think by sort of embracing the visual side, and I would say that there's a danger that you could go completely the other way,
mm-hmm.
where it's all design and you don't think about the functionality behind it. You sort of have to find this middle ground where both the developer and the designer are kind of like equal parties, and they work together and they rely on each other. You know, uh-huh. when I work with developers, a lot of times I'll lay things out and I'll say, you know, before I show the client, I'll say, okay, this is a layout. You know, do you see anything crazy here that I should not show the client so we don't get locked into it? And, you know, by now I've kind of learned some of those things and I generally don't have a problem. But I like to have that check, you know, mm-hmm. someone who's going to produce this thing can look at it and tell me, hey, look, you know, this thing over here, this would be a ton of hours to do this. You know, can we think of another way to do it? And, you know, so that they become a resource for me to kind of avoid problems later.
Okay.
And in the same way, I think, you know, graphics people can assist developers, and they have this idea to do this thing. And you know, I might tell them, well, that's a great idea, but it's going to clash with this or it's going to whatever.
Well, any other sort of last parting advice that you'd like to give to micro ISVs?
I would say do a lot of research, you know, look around at what other people are doing, get a feeling for what your competitive market is. And I think the thing that I'm finding most helpful for a micro ISVs when I initially talk to them is getting in early and, you know, bringing in someone to help them with a visual identity early. I've been really mm-hmm. fortunate with a lot of people coming in early and talking to me before they have products or when they're still building a product.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the opportunity to kind of give them some guidance and to kind of think of your designer as sort of a resource, someone who can help you, can be an objective person to kind of give you some feedback and to, you know, to be a resource for their needs and, you know, make use of their skills in a way that helps them move toward the goal that they want to achieve.
Makes sense to me.
All right. Well, I think that's a wrap for this edition of the MicroISV show. Thanks very much, Mike, for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And we'll put a link to your website and your blog on the blog post that goes along with this show. And hopefully MicroISVs, I certainly know that they're going to have to start thinking about design as an integral part of the building process. And I would just suggest that everybody start, you know, reading designer blogs like Mike's in order to sort of get up to speed, learn the lingo, and start thinking about different ways of doing things. It's going to be a whole new world. And so for Bob Walsh, my co-host over at clearblogging.com and safarisoftware.com, this is Michael Lehman at projectglidepath.net and blogs.msdn.com/mglehman, saying we'll see you next time on the MicroISV show here on Channel 9.